All right, let's dive into a case straight from the Supreme Court, one that's going to make us all think a little bit harder about property law, easements, and those tricky time limits. Are they a hard stop for the courts or just, you know, a procedural hurdle?
It's a fascinating case, Wilkins v. United States. What seems like a pretty simple property dispute in rural Montana, you know, involving an easement for a road called Robbins Gulch Road, turns into a Supreme Court battle, and it all boils down to this 12-year time limit and whether it actually prevents courts from even hearing the case.
Yeah, and just imagine, you know, you're dealing with a property issue, and maybe the government says, hey, we have an easement on your land, and you're thinking, wait, what? You can't just do that. But the thing is, what if that easement was granted, like, decades ago? Do you still have a chance to challenge it in court? That's what the Wilkins and Stanton families were facing.
Right, and that's where the Quiet Title Act, the QTA, comes into play. It basically gives individuals the power to challenge the government's claim to their property.
So it's kind of like a legal tool to clear up any confusion about who really owns what.
Exactly. It's all about making sure people can actually use and enjoy the land that's rightfully theirs.
But the catch here, right, is that the QTA has this 12-year statute of limitations. And in this case, both the District Court and the Ninth Circuit said, nope, too late. That 12-year clock has run out. You can't bring this case now.
They were relying on a previous case, Block v. North Dakota, which basically treated that time limit as a jurisdictional bar.
And just to be clear for our listeners, that means the courts basically said, we don't even have the power to hear this case anymore. It's like a case dismissed stamp before the case even begins.
Right, and that's exactly the question that went all the way up to the Supreme Court. Does this time limit actually strip the courts of their power, their jurisdiction to hear the case? Or is it more of a procedural rule, something that could potentially be waived?
Because that distinction is huge. It literally determines whether a property owner has any chance at all in court.
Absolutely. It's a make or break issue. And in a 6-3 decision, the Supreme Court said, no, the QTA's time limit is not a jurisdictional bar.
Okay, so that sounds like a win for property owners, right?
It could be. Justice Sotomayor, who wrote the majority opinion, pointed out that Congress has to be very, very clear. You know, they have to clearly state when they're creating a jurisdictional bar.
So it's like Congress has to spell it out, no room for ambiguity.
Exactly. And the QTA just doesn't use that kind of super specific language.
You know, I thought it was interesting that the QTA actually puts that time limit in a completely different section of the law from the part that actually gives courts the power to hear those cases.
Right, and that kind of suggests that maybe Congress didn't intend for it to be this absolute, unbreakable barrier.
So we're talking about nuances of legal interpretation here.
Exactly, and this gets us into another fascinating concept, sovereign immunity. The government is generally protected from lawsuits unless it specifically agrees to be sued, right?
Yeah, like a you can't touch this kind of thing.
Right. But the QTA, in a way, waives that immunity, but with certain conditions.
So the lower courts were basically saying, hey, part of the deal is that you have to follow that 12-year deadline. But if it's not actually a jurisdictional bar, if it's just a procedural rule, then the government would actually have to raise it as a defense. They might even choose to waive it completely.
And that's the big takeaway here. It opens up a whole new set of possibilities for property owners. It's like a potential loophole, right?
Definitely gives them more options than they might have thought they had. But, you know, just to present the other side, Justice Thomas, in his dissent, argued that any condition attached to a waiver of sovereign immunity is inherently jurisdictional.
Right. So there's definitely room for debate.
So we've got two different ways of looking at this, which brings us to the whole concept of clear statement rules. Courts are generally reluctant to limit their own power unless Congress is crystal clear about it. They want to see that this is the line you cannot cross language.
Right, and we've seen this clear statement principle at play in other cases too. Remember Arbaugh v. Y&H Corp? Completely different statute, but it highlights the same idea. Courts won't just assume Congress meant to restrict their authority unless they say it very explicitly.
So let's bring this back to our listeners. You're facing a property dispute with the government. What does this Supreme Court decision actually mean for you in a practical sense?
Well, one thing it definitely means is that more QTA cases might actually make it to court and be decided on their merits rather than being dismissed just because of when they were filed. That's a pretty big deal.
Yeah, it feels like a win for property owners. You're not automatically shut out just because of that time limit.
But it goes beyond that. Lower courts are now going to have to take another look at other laws with similar time limits for claims against the government. The Tucker Act, for example.
The one that covers all those money damage claims against the U.S. government. It's got a 6-year statute of limitations, right?
Exactly. And after the Wilkins decision, the question is that 6-year limit also not a jurisdictional bar? Could we see a bunch of old claims under the Tucker Act suddenly resurface?
Sounds like we're about to see a lot of legal strategizing going on. This could really shake things up.
Absolutely. And that's why it's so crucial for everyone involved in property disputes or really any kind of legal claim against the government to stay informed about these developments.
So it seems like the Wilkins case could really change things for property owners, especially those dealing with the government. But what about all the other laws out there with these kinds of time limits? Are we about to see a tidal wave of old cases coming back?
Well, not exactly a free-for-all. The Supreme Court was pretty clear that this ruling is specific to the Quiet Title Act, the QTA. But the principle they established, that clear statement requirement from Congress when it comes to jurisdictional bars, that's what could have far-reaching implications.
So courts will have to go through each law, line by line, and figure out if Congress really meant to set a hard deadline?
Precisely. Each law has its own history, its own context. And this is where things get really interesting for legal minds. Take the Tucker Act, for example. That covers a whole bunch of claims for money damages against the U.S. government. And it also has a statute of limitations, 6 years in this case.
Right, the Tucker Act. So after Wilkins, could someone argue that the 6-year limit in the Tucker Act also isn't a jurisdictional bar? Could we see a bunch of old claims under that law suddenly coming back to life?
It's a good question and definitely something worth exploring. But remember, every law is different. Courts will have to carefully examine the language of the Tucker Act, look at its legislative history, consider relevant case law, and then decide if the reasoning from the Wilkins case really applies.
I can already picture all the legal briefs piling up. It sounds like the Wilkins decision has opened up a Pandora's box of potential challenges.
Absolutely. And that's why it's so important for anyone involved in these kinds of cases, property disputes, or any claims against the government to really keep up with these developments. This is a dynamic area of the law.
It really is. So we've been getting pretty deep into the legal weeds here. But what does this case, Wilkins, really tell us about the big picture? You know, the relationship between individuals and the government, particularly when property rights are involved.
It's a great question. And I think you could argue that Wilkins reflects a growing trend in the courts, a trend toward more vigorously protecting those individual property rights, even when they're up against the power of the state.
It's almost like the courts are saying, hey, government, you can't just walk all over people's property rights without a solid legal basis. And you certainly can't do it without giving them a fair chance to defend themselves.
Exactly. It's about fairness, due process. And this aligns perfectly with the principles enshrined in the Fifth Amendment. You know, that part about protecting private property from government seizure without just compensation, that idea is woven into the fabric of our legal system.
But we can't forget the other side of the coin. The government has its own legitimate interests, right? Things like maintaining public access to roads, safeguarding natural resources, ensuring public safety.
Absolutely. And that's what makes cases like Wilkins so complex, so fascinating. They force us to confront this inherent tension between individual rights and the greater good. It's a delicate balancing act, finding that sweet spot where we protect the rights of property owners while also acknowledging the government's responsibility to act in the public interest.
It's a tightrope walk, no doubt. And this case really highlights the vital role that courts play in sorting through these conflicts, in interpreting the law in a way that they're fair, balanced, and consistent. We're not just talking about abstract legal theories here. We're talking about real-world consequences.
Right, real people's lives. And the Wilkins case reminds us that the law is dynamic. It's not static. It's constantly evolving, adapting to new situations, new interpretations. That's what keeps things interesting.
It definitely does. Okay, before we wrap up this part of our deep dive, let's go back to that hypothetical scenario we talked about earlier. Imagine you discover the government claims an easement on your property, but it's based on some old document, maybe even from the 1930s. What are your options now, considering the Wilkins decision?
Don't jump the gun just yet. The first thing you should do is find an attorney who really knows the ins and outs of property law, particularly the Quiet Title Act. They can help you determine if the government's claim has any merit and whether you have a strong case to challenge it.
So you're not saying Wilkins gives everyone a free pass to sue?
Exactly. It's more like a shift in the landscape, a new tool in the legal toolbox. But you need the right expertise to use that tool effectively.
And what about the time element? Does the Wilkins decision make it any easier to challenge a really old easement, even if it's been decades since it was granted? Do those time limits still carry weight in court?
Well, that's the big question, isn't it? Wilkins creates some interesting possibilities, but it's not a magic bullet. It doesn't mean that every old easement or time limit is automatically null and void. What it does is suggest that the 12-year clock in the QTA might not be the absolute end of the story.
So it's more like Wilkins has potentially shifted the power dynamics a bit, giving property owners some leverage they didn't have before.
Absolutely, but having a sound legal strategy with the right expert guidance, that's still critical.
So having a good lawyer is still a must.
Absolutely. And remember, that strategy will depend on the specifics of your situation, the details of your case, the particular laws in your state, and how the courts ultimately decide to apply the Wilkins decision to other property disputes.
It's a good reminder that even landmark Supreme Court cases like Wilkins don't have all the answers. Every legal battle is unique, and the outcome hinges on a complex web of factors. Okay, so we're back for the final part of our deep dive into the Wilkins case. We've talked about a lot, from the ins and outs of the Quiet Title Act to the broader implications for property rights, that whole balance of power between individuals and the government.
Yeah, it's been quite a journey. We've really untangled some tricky legal concepts and explored how this case, which might seem kind of obscure at first glance, could really reshape how property disputes are handled across the country.
You know, one thing that I keep coming back to is this idea of sovereign immunity. It's such a fascinating concept, right? The government basically can't be sued unless it gives the okay. But then we have laws like the QTA, which seem to create exceptions to that rule.
It's definitely a head scratcher. And the Wilkins decision just adds another layer of complexity to like trying to solve one of those Rubik's Cube puzzles.
So here's a question that's been bugging me. If the QTA's time limit isn't actually this impenetrable jurisdictional barrier, like the Supreme Court said, could the government theoretically just waive it completely? Could they just say, you know what, we don't care how long ago this easement was granted. If you think we're overstepping, come and make your case.
That's a really thought-provoking question. And honestly, I haven't seen any cases yet that directly address that scenario, but it's definitely something that legal experts are going to be thinking about and debating after Wilkins. It's uncharted territory.
And just imagine the implications. Property owners all over the country could suddenly challenge old easements or government actions, things that they thought were completely untouchable before. It would be like a complete upheaval.
Oh, it would definitely shake things up. But we have to keep in mind that even if the government could waive the time limit, it doesn't mean every claim would automatically succeed. Property owners would still have to prove their case, show that the government's actions are illegal or exceed their authority.
So Wilkins might be a game changer, but it's not a guaranteed victory for property owners. It's not like they can just show up and expect to win every time.
Right, exactly. There are still legal battles to be fought, and ultimately it's the courts that will decide how this all plays out in practice. It's a good reminder that legal wins are often, well, they're complex and they require a lot of work.
One thing that really strikes me about the Wilkins case is how it highlights the importance of precise language in the law. It's amazing how a seemingly small difference in wording can have a massive impact on how a law is interpreted and applied. It really shows you that words matter.
Oh, absolutely. This case is a perfect example of why those clear statement rules are so important. They basically force Congress to be very explicit, very clear, when they're trying to limit the power of the courts. It's like saying, hey, lawmakers, choose your words carefully because people are going to be analyzing and debating them for years to come.
And it's a good reminder for all of us, not just lawyers, to pay attention to the details, to question assumptions, and to, hold those in power accountable for the language they use. Language really does shape the world around us.
Couldn't have said it better myself. Wilkins v. United States is a case that's going to continue to generate discussion and legal challenges for years to come. It reminds us that the law is a living thing. It's constantly evolving in response to new situations and new interpretations.
And that's what makes it so fascinating. Well, we've reached the end of our deep dive. As always, we encourage you, our listeners, to stay curious, keep asking questions, and never stop learning. The world of law is full of surprises.
It certainly is. Thanks for joining us on this journey.
It's been a pleasure. See you next time.